The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, our callers, and guests, and do not necessarily represent those of the society, its management, or our advertisers. We hope you enjoy this week's episode.
Welcome to Sam Sense, the show that dives deep into the fascinating world of management. I'm one of your hosts, Allie, and I'm thrilled to have you join us on this journey of exploration and discovery. In each episode, we'll unravel complexities, share thought-provoking insights, and engage in captivating conversations with experts and enthusiasts in the management realm. This podcast is designed to both educate and entertain. Joined with me today are my co-hosts, Patrick, Hank, and Wesley. Welcome to our podcast.
Hey, welcome to this next episode of Sam Sense. We're going to pick up our conversation that we had with Michelle Gonzalez, who is the CEO and founder of New Frontiers Behavioral Health. And we're hoping I hate to cheapen it, because a lot of times you hear the expression, well, we're going to give you tips and tricks. And that to me sometimes sounds disingenuous. Like it sounds like it just cheapens it versus like a tactic or strategies, which is really kind of, I think, what we're going to try to talk about today with Michelle and how to appropriately address some situations and things like that at work.
Awesome.
Yeah. So let's start with something that we kind of touched on in a previous episode, but we didn't go down the rabbit hole on, and that's, having difficult conversations, okay? And like an example I can think of from my experience as a manager that I quite didn't know how to handle was somebody had exceptionally bad hygiene.
We're going to start with that as a question. That's a terrible thing to start off with a podcast guest.
So let me tell you about the person. The person's name was Patrick.
Wow.
So that's the reason why it's relevant. Okay.
Overruled. Well, that's why I'm in this separate recording studio. No. but in general, I know that's heavy off the bat. But I think it is a more common situation, and it might not be hygiene in and of itself, but it could be somebody's dousing themselves with cologne or dousing themselves with perfume or whatever.
Coming in after a cigarette.
Yeah, you got somebody who's, you know, allergic to smells, and then, you know, and the person's not really – like there's a lot of things in there. But in general, how do you start a difficult conversation?
Oh my gosh. Well, context is everything. So are you talking to a colleague, or are you a boss, or are you?
Let's assume a manager to an employee.
Manager to employee. Well, I mean, everyone hates being, you know, brought into the principal's office. So how do you create, you got to make sure you know what? are you looking for a tactic or a strategy?
This is either or.
Oh, okay. Yeah. How do you tell people bad news? Like, what's your approach? And the strategy needs to be honest, right? Like, I have something to say that might come across as rude or involve a lot of emotions. So there's honesty there, but it's also respecting the other person's dignity. Coming in again with that idea of a win-win situation rather than win-lose. Because there's going to be hurt feelings, and then being ready to, quote unquote, process them. What does that word process mean? I'm like, I'm not a computer. It means like to help the person not take it so personally. Mm. You know, because you'll hear this all the time. Well, this is just the way I am. And so the context, though, is you're part of a team. You're part of an organization. Like in healthcare, perfumes or odors or anything like that, there's a policy around it because a lot of our patients are allergic. Mm-hmm. You can't even wear false nails.
Wow.
You can't wear open-toe shoes on the clinic because what if blood got down? I'm not a behavioral health therapist. I'm not taking your blood. But what if? So safety, safety, safety. Everything's safety-oriented. I did have an employee that was like that too, with cigarettes and perfumes. And it took a lot of time and effort to move her out of it because I was like, this is the environment that has to be this way. And I know it sucks.
Yeah.
You know, and it was in the employee handbook. And how can I – and then the last thing is, how can I help you work with this, you know? Other times, some people get written up. They're like, yeah, somebody came in. They'll humiliate somebody. Like, they'll come in and they'll say, whoa, where's that BO coming from? And the person's like, whoa, is that me? I don't know. And they won't direct it. They'll just say it casually.
Sure.
As a manager, you got to stifle that right away. You have to say, look. And now you notice it. You mention it to the person in private. Dignity, folks. Come on. Treat everybody with respect and dignity.
That's fair.
And that's just the overall strategy, you know. Mm-hmm. No matter how annoying they are, or how blatant they are about their cologne, like, this is just the way I am. We're here to work together. Okay. This is not the Bill or Martha or, you know, Juanita show. Okay.
That's okay. Fair. Here's another scenario for you. You have two coworkers that work in different departments. They do not get along for whatever reason. And instead of them, I want to say instead of them being adults and talking about it. But that also feels very
dignity, Patrick.
They don't have the skills to talk it out and figure it out on their own.
Sure, we'll go with that. Then they don't currently have the skill set to be able to handle that problem. But what they are doing is sending passive aggressive emails to each other, and then including each other's bosses and things like that as they're flying around and slowly.
So per my last email,
slowly over time. The tension in the office has just risen and risen and risen. Wow. So in an example like that, where do you think we could make some inroads?
How long has this been going on for, may I ask? Like a day, a week, 2 months?
Well, let's say we're at like the 3 week period.
Okay.
Long enough to become a known problem and for things to start to get really hairy, but not enough to where, you know, the building's on fire or
Good.
You know.
Yeah, I mean, that the category is drama in the workplace. You know, drama is all about my personal beliefs and values and attitudes matter more than somebody else's. And it comes down to it is a distraction. It doesn't matter who, what, when, where, how. This is a distraction to the core goals of the team and the organization. Mm-hmm. And knock it off. You know, I give them really harsh warnings. Yeah. I've had it with that. No. Because it's like a family system. You know, you have one bad actor in there and they're, you know, they could be clinically depressed or anxious and the entire family is taken off. They're catering to them. They're like kowtowing. They're like, oh no, don't slam doors in the morning because mommy gets really upset when she can't rest. And it's like, no, what's the goal of the family? Grow the family, take care of it, protect it, be healthy, interact with each other. We have to look at it that way.
Yeah.
You know, and if it's within somebody, like they really do have a problem, you come back, how can I help you? You don't have to get along to work together. Let's go back to what I said before, respect and dignity. Mm-hmm. You know, people don't believe in that.
Yeah.
So as an individual, you got to say, when you're ready to treat me with respect and dignity about how to get this task done, then we'll talk about it. Sounds great because we're in a clinical situation here, but you got to practice it. I find that drama is mostly about people who are territorial and, you know, have done it this way forever and they have trouble moving forward. So, you know, you have to do a harsh warning.
Okay.
A little bit of a, what's it called? A stick.
No, not the carrot. Give them the stick. So I've, you know, tangent off of that, but in a similar prospect, you have an employee that you've had to, you know, give really blunt, critical feedback to them, and then they just shut down. They avoid you, and you know they'll see you walking down the hallway, and they'll turn around and go the other way, or they'll, you know, actively disengage from trying to connect with you because, you know, you were blunt in how you are doing this, you're doing that. Well, no, you say you're the supervisor of this person. You know, in this particular example, you had to have one of those really rough conversations where you're pulling them to task and they, you know, don't necessarily maybe have the skills for handling that because we've talked in a variety of different episodes on the podcast about social, you know, interaction skills and how some people feedback is a problem and they don't know how to take it.
They're taking it really personally. And then as criticism, right?
There are managers who are like, I have talked to you about this for
10 times and I'm just stop doing the thing. You know, you're not supposed to be doing it, whatever the, you know, whatever it is that they're doing that's incorrectly. And you just, you know, like if you continue to do this, the door's right there and I'm going to put you out it. So they're really blunt and harsh about it.
Whoa, the door's right there. Yeah. Okay. So that's threatening. Yeah.
So like, you know, the manager reaches the end of their wits and whatnot. How do you go back to start to rebuild some of that? Yeah. Because in one case, the employee is in the wrong because they're consistently yeah. performing a behavior that they've been coached on not doing.
Yeah.
But the manager clearly went over the line in the like, this is how I'm going to handle this because they're just frustrated.
Yeah. So in my world, supervisors meet with their supervisees or their employees at least once a week, no matter what. I know it's very time consuming. It could be half an hour, it could be 15 minutes. You gotta build the one-on-one rapport. But when it comes to hurt feelings like that, you know, it's like someone takes your feedback really personally and you lost your temper, which I can totally understand. It goes back to that strategy of, am I going to avoid this? And approach it, you know. If the person's avoiding you, maybe they just need some time out, you know. But the session that when you actually have to meet and talk about performance or talk about whatever they, you know, time off or something, they go, hey, can we revisit that conversation? Mm-hmm. And, of course, what are they going to say? No. And you're going to go, we're going to. Yeah, because I think I might have – there might be some hurt feelings here. I mean, so that's a statement, right? That's what I do in therapy too. It's like, oh, wow, you must have been really angry. Or, wow, you look, your whole body's totally off. And they're like, yeah, it is. I guess so. So sometimes you have to do a statement. And it goes back to you guys doing motivational interviewing as a tactic for managing is dealing with ambivalence, you know, people who are just like, I don't know, I'm not ready to change, mm-hmm. you know? And so people have to start thinking about it and then they take preparation and then they will take action to it. So your language to them is really dealing with their ambivalence and unreasonableness, mm-hmm. you know? So that's one thing that you could use, but yeah, you got to revisit it. I'd ignore it for a little while, but then you got to revisit it. And they'll always deny, expect that, because nobody wants to talk about hurt feelings. And then you come back to your overall arching motif that we've been talking about. This is about evolving your team to be high performers. Hmm.
So following up on that, on Patrick's example, and he said like a manager hit their breaking point, right?
Yeah.
Managers, how can managers process or de-stress from things that they can't control? Like, because like the one thing you can't control is your employees. You can coach
other people's behavior.
If you're right. You can't really do a heck of a lot there. But how can you make it so when you leave at 5 o'clock, you're not still mad at Sally?
Oh God. Yeah. Not taking on that. Well, you'd be like Mr. Rogers. You could take off that sweater and then put on your home coat and just say, I'll leave it at the office. Okay, that's a metaphor. Like, how do I take off my role? But it's emotional. Like, how do I stop processing about thinking about it? Going over, did I do the right thing? You know, doubting yourself. The other thing that people do is being angry about it. Like, this, how come this person isn't changing, right? So come back to the overarching theme, about we have what's called self-determination. People will determine, can have the right to determine where they want to go. If it's disruptive to the team, you have to make a decision about it. Mm-hmm. Second thing, the motivational interviewing, you know, the change, they have to think about it. I say that to people. I say, think about it. I don't really want to think about it. Think about it. Dealing with resistance. And then the other thing is examine your own anger. Examine, like, where is this coming from? Sometimes it comes from a past event in which you really wanted to help somebody and they just were getting in their own way. And, you know, you just felt so responsible for them.
You know, sometimes when you're just listening to someone talking, you like, you have a lightning bolt that strikes.
Yeah.
I watch Mr. Rogers as a kid constantly. I never once realized that he comes home and he takes off his work, you know, suit coat and puts on a home, you know, cardigan. And that's him taking off work and putting it away in the closet for the rest of the day and then taking it out home and putting it on.
Wow. He's changing his role from Dr. Rogers to Mr. Rogers. He's changing his role. It's really important to do that. We're all wearing different robes constantly. Yeah. Different roles.
And business is definitely the land of make-believe.
Yeah, we haven't talked about humor. Humor is actually the number one thing that everybody should look at. Humor towards self and humor towards this human condition that is so chaotic and disruptive.
It's just one of those like love fascinating it. Things that I just like – the light bulb went on while we were sitting here, and I'm like,
"You've never noticed that before?"
Well, I always noticed that he came home and he took off his, you know, what he was out in the world in, and then put on a cardigan, and then, you know, just that was I just never put two and two together that was him bringing. You know, he came home from work. He changed his jacket and he changed his shoes.
That's right.
And put on something comfortable, and I guess I never really connected those pieces until we're sitting here talking about
this
it. I'm
is
like,
great,
it's all about transitioning from one role into another and leaving work at home so that you can, or leaving work at the office so that at home you can focus on, you know, other different parts of fulfilling your life.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, there's some people actually, that's why you have that 20-minute commute sometimes for people in cars and music. There's one illustration, I think it's in the Happiness Hypothesis, about a man who had a tree. He owned his own business, and he would dump all of his worries on the tree. Like, it was symbolic for him. Mm-hmm. And then he was able to just be present for his family. It's just that is actually key emotional regulation, you know. But, you know, sometimes we need a metaphor. We need a practice. Good.
I like that. It's just one of those things that I.
Yeah.
I'm so happy for you.
Now I feel so old that I'm like, oh, it took me this long to figure that out.
No. A lot of people say, what is Mr. Rogers again? I don't know, it's a who, but that's okay. I'll still tell them the story.
There you go. Well, one of the things that you mentioned that I think stood out to me just a few moments ago, and I was hoping to get a little more clarity on it. Oftentimes, new managers come into their role, or even in some cases, seasoned managers. Obviously, there is a power dynamic there between the manager and you know those that they manage. And I think it is extremely easy to fall into this trap of threats. And you know, that was something that you mentioned, and how detrimental threats can be to the culture of the workplace and what that looks like and sounds like. And so I think what I'm trying to understand from a you know manager's perspective, how can we provide some recommendations or to avoid threats, like, you know, to identify what may come across as threatening, even though maybe you don't intend it to be that way as a manager. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in the way, because of the power dynamic at play that you may not even be thinking about in the moment.
Got it.
You know, what does that mean? And what can we do to avoid that, to prevent from creating strife?
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know. I don't know.
Right.
Let's spitball here. So I thought of threats in two ways. The overt threat, like, if you don't do this, you're fired, right? Mm-hmm. And then the one that seems like a covert threat. And let's call it organizational change.
Mm.
Okay. And so threat is a perception of the other, you know, like, you hear something, you're like, oh no, everything's going to change. I'm doomed. You know, so a person, the employee, for lack of anything, goes through these iterations of like nervousness and being afraid, you know, the fight or flight type of, or freeze or just melt away, like disassociate, you know, like when people are just, they're at work, but it's presenteeism. They're at work, but they're not really at work.
Yeah.
Okay. That happens a lot. I think the strategy, because things do change, is, and I see it in a lot of managers, is they try to be folksy about it. They'll like talk about their own vulnerability and their own concerns and fear. And sometimes that helps as long as you wrap it up again, back to problem solving.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So how do you deal with emotional context? And everybody on the podcast, I want you to remember, anything that happens, your first reaction is always going to be emotional. So accept that.
Yeah.
You know? People talk about it all the time. You're coming to work and you left the desk nice and neat, and all of a sudden someone's sitting in there, you're like, ooh. Yeah. Surprise. Fear, like, did I get fired? You know, and then you're like, okay, I need to inquire more about this. Be curious. Mm-hmm. Okay. Be curious. Like, what's going on? Instead of, what the hell? You're in my space.
Yeah. So true.
Okay. So, hey, just identify, validate the feelings, and then move towards problem solving. Mm-hmm. Another thing that a manager needs to do when there's threats, if someone does say threat, is to own that threat, you know, to say, look, I'm sorry, this has to be so harsh. I'm concerned about the whole organization. Mm-hmm. It's not just a job.
Yeah.
We have an initiative here. And I've had people say to me, oh my God, I'm going to lose my job. And I said, this is not your job. Yeah. You have an opportunity to be part of a team. So we've got to get away from people thinking that the work they're doing is owned by them. Oh, I hate that. I mean, the job. They're there to be part of an initiative that's bigger than themselves.
Yeah.
Not just get a paycheck.
And that's the
I've been here for 30 years, or this is how we do things. And you're like, yeah, that's how we did things.
Yeah.
Got to evolve. So if you keep using that language, people call it more like a feminine language, which is, you know, talking about the human condition, talking about evolution, talking about growing, change, adapting, all of that. That's life.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need to just go in and execute and take charge and what's another favorite word? Dominate and eliminate. Okay. Mm-hmm.
That's so true. I mean, you know, when we talk about the power dynamic there, it's really breaking down those barriers to be able to have genuine connections there and be able to pursue the mission of the organization together as a whole. So
yes.
I love the fact that, you know, that all of that was able to come full circle. One of the, I think, challenges that we oftentimes find into, we have the best of intentions, right, as a manager, and we try to do things the right way, but there, you know, again, and I think this goes back to some of the drama, but like, let's say, given an example, I know we've used some examples so far this morning, so maybe we'll give another example here. But you have a situation where your team sits in cubicles, so they're all like right on top of each other all day long, right? Mm-hmm. And you need to have a difficult conversation with somebody. And so you've got to, you know, you've got to get them into a private space to have this type of conversation, or at least that's the way I would certainly want to handle it.
Yeah.
But in order to do that, you've got to communicate to them, hey, I need some of your time. You've got to do it in a way that doesn't create too much stress for them, that they understand, you know, what the situation is, but without letting the others in those cubicles around them know, because inevitably, oh, well, so-and-so just went into a private meeting with the boss. Like, what's going on?
You mean putting a meeting on their calendar and not explaining what it is isn't going to bring them joy?
Yeah.
Don't ambush people, right?
Right. 4:30 p.m. on a Thursday, meeting with boss.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be.
Oof. Yeah, that's happened to me before too. Yeah.
But I think of how difficult it is. You know, we talk about some of these hypotheticals, and like, this is a real challenging situation where you have a team that literally works on top of each other, you know, every day. And how do you – you know, how do you handle the dynamics of all of that? Because not only do you have to handle the, you know, the actual situation at hand, but then you've also got to deal with the culture around it of, you know, everybody who knows about it within those 10 cubicles around them now all of a sudden is speculating and,
oh yeah,
you know, and assuming what is taking place. And so, you know, am I right in thinking that maybe the best way to approach that would just be to create a routine of those types of things that are generally very positive? Like, that's how we generally approach it, so that way when those things happen, it's perceived to be positive? Or how do you, you know, what do you see? What do you recommend? Anything of that nature?
Well, I love the fact that you're outlining the complexities of the workplace, because human beings are going to, you know, be human beings, and you can't create a structure that will protect everybody.
Right.
It's going to get out. Mm-hmm. And so it's how you manage that yourself. I mean, sometimes you're going to have to give bad news at 4:30 in the afternoon. Sometimes, you know, you called in a person to get fired, something like that, and people are going to talk. And so as a manager, it's like, some people come in, they're just like, this is my agenda. I'm going to make it happen no matter what. And that's considered a bit hostile.
Yeah.
So you better be ready to handle the hostility and the fear. But if I think that if you come back to just like calling people to the office, no matter what, you know, you lead by respect and dignity, and I don't want to disturb the workplace right now. And you know, people are going to talk afterwards.
Yeah.
You know? And it really comes down to holding by your decision, which is, as a manager, you have a purview that's greater than the individual employee. Mm-hmm. And you trust your director and you trust your CEO to also as well. Mm-hmm. You know, the decisions they make aren't always the best, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, bad news has to happen. So then, you know, my number, my website. So it's like, how do you manage your emotions around it? But if you try to treat the person well, you didn't storm and say, you know, Hank, come to my office, grr.
Right.
You know? But if you do that all the time, they're just like, oh, well, something again happened. Right. You know, it's just their style.
Yeah, just another day.
Just another day.
Wesley's going to get a bill in the mail.
I'm using this. I'm taking advantage of this session.
And that goes back to like, how do you deal with a manager who's really hostile and immature? And, you know, how do you manage it? How do you manage your manager? Mm. You know, and that leads to the difficult conversations in which, you know, you have to assert yourself. You have to say, I find when you do this, it throws my work off. You know, make it a work thing. Don't say, I get nervous. Because they're not going to care. Yeah. What they care about is your performance. And some environments are hostile. Filmmaking, stock market, banking. And sometimes you got to play up to it. You got to, you know, do that. And so you got to decide which, you know, workplace you want to be in.
One of the phrases I think that I hated the most was, well, you know what you signed up for. Mm. I'm like, let's tone that back a little bit.
Well, yeah, that's
what I say about this podcast all the time.
They work really hard at it. Yeah.
So I feel like, you know what you signed up for kind of is a good segue into my next question, because that is a very generational based thought process where, you know, the older generation is kind of less forgiving of your feelings towards the situation. So I guess my...
Suck it up, right?
So I got to say something to Wesley.
Oh, yeah, my goodness.
Okay, go ahead.
Wesley, work is not therapy.
Work causes me to need therapy.
Exactly. And that's how it is. And that's how it always will be.
And yet we spend, you know, almost two-thirds of our life working in organizations, you know? Our time during the work week, 40, 50, 60, 70 hours.
Yeah. So I guess that's...
if you're Hank.
back to my transition out of Wesley's question. We're starting to see a lot more power dynamic shifts where the management team and companies are of the younger generation. Mm. And the workforce is of the... or the teams that they're assigned to lead are older generation. And we're seeing that those are things where, you know, there's a power dynamic issue that happens in there. Can you give us any, you know, insight or direction that we can kind of pass along to our listeners about how to handle, you know, you're a manager, you're in your 20s, you have a team full of 40, 50, 60-year-olds who are, you know, career employees of wherever the company is, but they were... maybe they weren't interested in being a manager. Maybe they were passed over. Maybe there was some, you know, shift in the leadership team's decision to create a new, you know, cohort of managers who are going to be there for 20 years. Yeah. And the older generation isn't necessarily going to, even though we understand that that is workplace discrimination. I'm trying to be real here. It happens.
It happens. Just because it's discrimination doesn't mean it's not true.
Or it's not happening.
It's correct. Going to happen, yeah.
And I like that you broke down the potential reasons for why it's happening, because I have seen every single one of those happen in reality. good, bad, right, wrong, whatever, you know, not necessarily the point that we're here today, but I think it is important as we start the conversation to understand how we got ourselves into this, you know, situation. Why is this happening? Yeah. Okay, so now, okay, we understand why it's happening and that it is happening. Now we can address it from the other side of, okay, well, now how do you handle that as the new, you know, as the new young guy on the block or the young girl right. on the block or whatever that is. Now, what do you do?
This is your new reality, right?
Correct. Correct.
Excellent. Well, first, don't deny it. Let's go back to the difficulty. Let's go back to what we had mentioned, too, that anytime you have two people in the room, you're going to have conflict. You know, even if you get along with each other and you love each other and blah, blah, blah. It's all, you know, coming up with the approach of win-win. But I also would call this something that's more than intergenerational management issues because, you know, we do have four generations working at the workplace. My mother is 80 and she's still working as a lawyer. So, but, you know, so she has a lot of decisional latitude. She's not like working, you know, where someone's telling her she has to be there from, you know, 8 o'clock to four. The other one is from buddy to boss. You know, when you become, when you start to, you know, that's a real challenging one. Cause like now you're telling me I can't drink coffee at my desk. You know, yeah, because the computers and this and that, and you spill it last time and went through three computers. So
guilty.
Oh.
I remember we just moved into this new gorgeous office. It was the first time I was there. I spilled coffee. Luckily, the computers weren't set up anything, but I spilled coffee everywhere, all over the tables, all over the floor, all over the chairs.
Somebody else might have done that this week as well.
Oh, I hit a nerve.
So now y'all have me wondering, because of course, obviously I'm in the tech space, but I've only encountered that once or twice.
Oh, it happens so much.
So now I'm wondering how often does this happen that people are not telling me?
Yeah, people hide it. It's like, I don't know why my computer is on the fritz. Like, what's going on?
There's 32 ounces of caffeine in it.
How many keyboards have you replaced?
Because of coffee?
No, just replaced. Like, my keyboard doesn't work. I don't understand why. How many times have you done that?
They eat at the desk.
It's pretty rare, actually, all things considered, yeah.
Because I'd venture a guess that 99% of my keyboard doesn't work anymore is some variation of my office liquid or food situation spilled out over onto my keyboard, and I cleaned it up so that it looks like it's okay, but inside that thing's a mess.
Human beings are
if
sloppy.
You tipped it like this, you could recover the coffee.
Yeah, no, only twice that I can think of because of coffee or you know, just a drink of some sort, not necessarily that it was coffee. But I am wondering now, to what extent is this happening more than what I'm realizing? And, you know, what does that mean? Interesting.
I think it's happened to me three times in the last year.
Wow. Well, that's impressive. Okay.
Nothing had to be replaced, but, yeah, you know, like,
yeah,
it like explosion.
What do you say, Hank? What do you say, Hank, when that happens?
Yeah, exactly.
MF, he says. You know, this is why your manager says don't drink coffee or eat at the desk, right? Yeah. So that's one mandate, let's just say, that happens. So other than buddy to boss or intergenerational differences, as a manager, you have to remember there's a reason there's a hierarchy and a circle in the organization, okay? Most of our organizations were hierarchical in the beginning because the work was very logistically oriented, but now you have specialists and professionals and people who are licensed and they're like, you're not my boss, but you're still accountable for their performance. So the hierarchy is based on accountability. Sure, I'm the one that's going to get laid off. And so a lot of employees do know that too, but it's okay to say to them that what's happened before, I'm here, I'm accountable, I'll have your back, I'll do what I can to make things transition easily and help with making meaning. But at this point in time, here's where we're going. Yeah. And then you got to demonstrate that. You can't flounder. I mean, that's the thing. You're going to have to work on yourself more. You're going to have to work on your emotional regulation, your distress tolerance, and how you communicate effectively.
Yeah. And one of the things about intergenerational I kind of wanted to ask about is one of these things that I've noticed is we're experiencing a glut of retirements, just particularly not only within my organization, but out. Like the baby boomers are all starting to leave the workforce. And
can't wait.
Yeah.
Okay. But wait, I think that has a lot to do with where you are geographically.
True.
Because there are places, especially here in the United States, where the retirement opportunity through poor financial planning has indicated that those people are, there was a name for it, but they're essentially going to be at their desk when they're carted out. Coroner.
Right. But in general, I mean, maybe this is more in general question, because we've been like, as I get older, I've been having conversations with people older than I am about what is retirement, right?
Is like, how do we still alive?
Yeah. Love
how
you,
old are you?
Right.
I don't know. How old were you in the last episode? I think we left that off on the show. But, you know, what is it's funny. Why do we work, right? We work to pay bills and have a life, right? But what's the quote unquote goal of work? Is it retirement? Like, for a lot of people, it's just retirement. And then what I've witnessed is a lot of people are – like, okay, I've worked my life, I'm retiring, and now what? You know, like, they don't have anything but their job, you know? And I mean, that goes back to other issues, you know, like that's other things, you know, in general. But as a manager or somebody, and people are coming and they're getting like, hey, I'm going to retire in 3 years, or I'm going to retire in 2 years. What types of things what questions can you ask to help those individuals transition into that new area of life, to kind of like help them along?
Yeah. We got to appreciate our life stages, you know, that there's always a task, a new initiative that you have to do to master your stages of change over lifespan. And usually it's every 7 years. Sometimes it's certain lifestyle changes, like getting married, or, you know, adopting or bringing in children, or taking care of elderly relatives. I'm not going to just say parents. It could be relatives as well, that bring on like this change. And when the change happens to me, people's perception of what's important also changes. You know, like, hey, Ruth, I used to notice you used to come in at 8:30 every morning. Now you're coming in at 9:05. Yeah, I got to take care of like my grandkids in the morning, and I'm really stressed out about it. And so, you know, it's like, you don't, like, do you accommodate it, or how do you have those conversations in which can your workplace be flexible or not? I mean, 8:30 is the time to come in because other people are covering you at the desk. Mm-hmm. You know? So it's, and that's why a lot of companies have these concierge, you know, lifestyle type services, but a lot of places don't. I mean, think about a Walmart, think about customer service. You have to be on the phone. You got to do this. So there's things to think about that, and to ask them, like, what would make this better for you? And then say, well, I can't because it's policy, blah, you know, et cetera. But in terms of transition, it is asking people, what do you enjoy? What's meaningful activities for you? Have you thought about what you're going to do when you retire? You know? People in our business, in the healthcare business, we have to give 3 months notice. Ooh. And it's debilitating. And what I find towards the last 3 years.
If everyone could see the look on Allie's face when she heard that you had to give 3 months notice.
You're tiring. You know, people are going to start
a 3 hour notice.
Yeah.
But that's a three month notice because you're retiring and moving and transitioning out of the workforce.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Retire. Not quitting.
Okay.
No, by law, it's like, not by law, but you're an employee at will. So the nice thing to do is 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Where was I going with this? Yeah. I find people checking out on things that they don't care anymore. The stuff that is bureaucratic. Mm-hmm. So what they're more going to look towards is, you know, what is it, is my the basics that I can do to get by on this job, you know? And then checking in about their stress levels.
Well, we're running out of time on this episode, but we would like to do something a little fun with you.
Okay.
My only contribution this episode.
So we're going to play a little game of called This or That. Patrick's going to put 2 minutes on the clock. And what it is Allie is going to read you a list of different things, one or the other. And you have to pick which of the two that you would prefer. Okay. If
this is a personality,
you are welcome. You are welcome to explain your choices.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
but the objective is to get through as many as fast as you can. Our current champion got through 11, if I'm correct in remembering, right?
So now it's a competition too.
Well, my list only has 12. So,
okay.
Show prep.
All right.
So, Allie, the floor is yours.
Does anyone have a timer going?
I'm ready whenever you're ready.
All right. 3, 2, 1. CBT or psychodynamic therapy?
CBT.
In-person or telehealth?
In-person.
Structured treatment plans or client-led sessions?
Client-led sessions.
Group therapy or individual therapy?
Individual therapy.
Mindfulness practices or physical exercise?
Ooh, physical exercise.
Immediate crisis intervention or measured de-escalation?
Measured de-escalation.
Focusing on past experiences or present challenges?
Present challenges.
Evidence-based methods or innovative integrative approaches?
Evidence-based.
Mental health apps, indispensable or just a trend?
Trend.
Systematic organizational changes or individual self-care practices?
Systematic organizational changes.
Open dialogue about mental health or discrete one-on-one support?
Open dialogue.
Last question, gradual behavior changes or transformative radical shifts?
Transformative radical shifts nowadays.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah.
Wow, you did them all. Congratulations.
And I'll tell you why, because I was torn between the group therapy and individual, because we are now in a new frontier of our mental health, behavioral health, which is that we've got to do it in community. We've got to learn from each other. We've got to learn to be better than we were with others.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's why I also mentioned in person, because right now I'm all telehealth, but everyone's like, I'm so tired of this because I need the tactile. I need to feel and read off of people. And the more high tech we get, the more high touch we need.
Mm-hmm. I like that. That phrase a lot.
She just did a really great approach. She answered all the questions and then she went back and explained.
Yes.
That is the route to go.
Strategic.
Strategic.
Strategic,
because I had a competition. Yes, I prioritized my objectives.
Right, it's all about following the instructions.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
Oh, so that's why they didn't finish,
because they were explaining each one. Yeah.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they would be like, well, it could be this one or it could be that one.
They were explaining the thinking process. Yeah. Interesting. You don't do that in competition. See, there's an approach for every context.
Exactly.
Until next time, I'm Hank.
I'm Wesley.
I'm Patrick.
And I'm Allie.
Keep exploring, keep learning, and keep your passion for management ignited. Stay curious, stay inspired, continue to evolve, and join us again next time as we help you make management make sense.